Everybody, sorry I'm running a bit late tonight. Yeah, we just had a little bit of an internet problem before we hooked on live. So yeah, I'll give people a little bit of time just to sort of hook up on board. And so yeah, if you're online now and you're watching, just put a few thumbs up through and just let me know that people are getting this loud and clear, and then we can get started. Okay, everybody. Well, I'll get started anyway. So the topic that I'm going to talk about tonight is personal space. Everyone's quite aware of, you know, personal space. You know, when you go out somewhere and you're at a barbecue or something and someone walks up a little bit close to you, you can get a little bit, get a bit like that when people come up to you. And you know, some people are in your personal space more than others, and we get that feeling around horses. So firstly, the first personal space I'd like to talk about is respecting a horse's personal space. I know a lot of people are worried about their own personal space, but when I'm at a clinic or doing lessons, and I do this a lot more now, once upon a time I must admit, I sort of used to walk up to a horse and sort of, you know, someone would hand me over their horse to help them with their horse, and I'd just start sort of, you know, doing stuff to help the horse. What I do a lot more nowadays is I walk up to the horse and I sort of, whether it's a quiet horse or a nervous horse or anything, I sort of walk up and I try and ask for consent to say, you know, am I allowed to come and say hello? Are you interested in me? Before I just walk up and put a hand on them and say, oh, g'day, and I... because what you see is a lot of people walk up to a horse and just, you know, rub it on the head and, you know, hello, how are you going? You know, nice horse. Regardless of if that horse was to like it or not. So they're sort of interrupting that horse's bubble. I think it's okay just to step in and sort of, you know, do whatever they want with that horse. Now, I believe in training horses, it's very much like training your children is, you know, if you do something, if what you expect done, you do yourself. So, you know, I'm not going to want to expect a horse to sort of respect my space if I can't respect their space. So firstly, I think it's very important that we acknowledge a horse and their space and their feelings and all that sort of thing. And then if we can acknowledge that, we can set up our own boundaries for them to acknowledge our boundaries and our personal space. I do think it's a bit rude when we expect big things, but we don't. It's not a two-way agreement, whereas we can do all this stuff with the horse, but we expect all this extra stuff, and they can't sort of communicate so much with us. So firstly, you don't go in and say a horse is disrespectful when they push in your personal space. Disrespect is not a word I tend to use a lot in horse training and helping horses, because basically, you know, horses, yeah, there's horses that they might seem disrespectful. They've been potty raised and that sort of thing, and they're so quiet around people that they're sort of pushy and sort of narky, and they can be sort of a real handful, but that's just what they've sort of learned and the way they've learned to operate. You know, but a lot of times when a horse is a bit pushy, there's a lot of other reasons other than disrespect that sort of motivates them. And a lot of it is to do with lack of clarity and lack of us having clear boundaries. And I was just away on the weekend at my brother's wedding, and I was talking to a lady who's into dogs, and I can't sit up and preach on this, because it's something that I still have trouble with, and is you know, people being very centered, and if you've ever talked to someone who's very centered, they've certainly got an aura about them that's a little bit different, whereas you know that you can feel it, they've got something about them that you can really sort of sit and listen to. But you can feel there's a strength of presence about them. Now, in our busy lives, we a lot of people aren't very centered. You know, we've got a lot of stuff going on. We're not very confident. You know, we're sort of worried about no. You can either suffer from lack of confidence. You can be worrying about 10 things at a time because you've got so much clutter in our lives, and you know, and we're always, you know, wondering if we're good enough, or you know, all these things come into play, and it sort of ungrounds us and takes that sort of centeredness away from us, and that centeredness is part of our strength that we have around horses. So before I even talk about establishing personal space, some of that centeredness comes into play when we're working around horses, and I've seen you know, children and adults just stand centered, and all of a sudden their horses start becoming aware of their space and stop being pushy, though they haven't set up maybe a boundary that, you know, a clear boundary to say, well, okay, well, maybe I'd like you to stand at my arm's length or something like that. Those horses will stop pushing on them and that sort of thing. So yeah, there's all that sort of thing that comes into play. So one thing I do at clinics a lot now is I just get people to grow their roots into the ground and just imagine that they're a big old gum tree that's been, you know, in the river for 1,000 years and no floods ever washed them over. But being a big gum tree means that they're a shady place for their horse. Their horse is there. You know, if your horse was to come and stand with you, you're provided with shade and shelter and that sort of thing. But that centeredness of growing into a tree and growing your roots in the ground can make you quite strong, but strong in a comforting way, as in they will stand with you, they won't push into you, but they'll be comfortable standing with you. And what you'll find is if you get good at doing this, then they'll drop their guard a little bit more because you're standing there centered and on guard. So that's going to be a big thing in establishing personal space, because I see a lot of horses that are scared of their owners because they've established a personal space by, you know, getting their horse out of their space and saying, you know, this is my space, you respect it, and they sort of push under their horses and they move their feet away and move their feet away again and move their feet away again, and then the horse ends up sort of nervous of the person. So instead of being that big comforting tree that's strong that the horse can really find comfort in, they're actually a little bit separated from the people. So, and there's a few questions that have come through. I'm going to start on the ones which are more about the personal space, and then I'll go to the others, which a lot of them have come through are more about you know, separation anxiety and that sort of thing. But you know, if you're good with your personal space, you're going to help separation anxiety and all those other things. But if you just sort of, you know, make your personal space this big bubble of horses can't get in, that you know, every time a horse steps into it, you push them out and say, you know, don't be disrespectful, then you're not going to help separation anxiety and all the other things that you have with your horse. So you have to be very careful with that personal space and how you use it and how you set it up. So as you probably heard me talk before, that one of the most, you know, the best things that you know, in horsemanship you'll hear, and one of the things that is you don't push your boundaries into your horses, you just set your boundaries up and your horse finds boundaries. So if your horse finds boundaries, they're comfortable about it. So by pushing your boundary into your horse all the time, they start to worry about, you know, where they should be. And I use this example quite a lot. You know, if you see a few horses eating hay, you'll see one horse that runs around and pushes the other horses off hay and, you know, goes across and pushes another horse off hay. And then you'll see a horse that just will eat their hay. But as soon as a horse comes within a certain distance of them and their hay, they'll have some body language that says, oh, you know, I wouldn't come any closer. And if that horse was to step in and try and take that hay, then they'd say no. But it'd be a clear boundary. The horse that was running, chasing to get hay and chasing the horses off, that one, the horses didn't like it, and they didn't like getting pushed away. And it's an unclear horse. And every time those horses come into feed time and are near that horse, they're really stressed because that horse causes them a lot of stress because they don't know where they have to be. And if you've ever seen a horse, you know, running around a yard in a panic because there's this horse that pushes it around, They don't like it very much. But what they do like is a confident horse that says, well, you know, you can walk right past my hay as long as you're not coming in to get it or coming into the bubble, then you're fine. Then they can eat hay right beside them or whatever, it doesn't matter. So personal space is more like that. It's a bubble, and it's a clear bubble, and it doesn't change. So you don't go, oh, my horse is jumping around on the end of a rope one day. You know, the personal space is now 3 meters away from me, and then tomorrow it's going to be 1 meter away from me, and the next day it's 2 meters away. And you have to be quite clear to say, well, okay, you can jump around out there all you like, but as soon as you're within arm's distance of my bubble, then that's where the force field is, and that's where I may either deflect you or just, you know, put up a rope. Like I like to get a rope, like I'm going to use a pen here, just like that, and I just make a big long fence in front of me and let the horse find that bubble and bounce off it. So that's really important, but it has to be clear. What happens, I'll get my little horse here, just so you can everyone see the little horse and the little person. What generally happens is the horse might be standing here and he's sort of going in and he just goes there and the person moves a bit. And then he might walk through there and the person moves out of the way as he walks through there. And I see that happen all the time. It's just like we shift a little bit. We lean back a little bit. We lean over here a little bit when our horse is sort of moving there. And the horses are constantly shifting our feet a little bit. And they know that. And sometimes we don't know it. Sometimes we do. We were aware of it, but we don't change it. And that's where you got to really grow your roots into the ground and say, you know, you can rub against me, but I'm a tree. You know, I'm not going to move. And then you might sort of, you know, bounce them back and say, you know, that's it. But our horses are shifting us all the time. So, yeah, I'd be careful that you're not letting them shift your feet all the time. Doesn't mean you've got to go and shift their feet to become sort of, you know, an alpha and that sort of thing. It's just don't let them shift you around all the time and constantly move through your spot and you move your spot so they can take your spot sort of thing. So that's really important in personal space. So I set up a bubble around me, and it's usually arm's distance, because arm's distance for me is I want to touch my horses. So and my bubble becomes a little force field. If you ever seen two soapy bubbles stick together like that, you know, they stick together. Well, I want the horse's bubble and my bubble to sort of stick together so the horse can operate around me, know where it is, and I can actually use that as a gluing point as well, not just a deflection point. So I can deflect the horse off my bubble. If I'm casting them around, they can just bounce off my bubble gently if they know where it is. Or I can use it to wrap them around me and walk around my bubble, and I can touch them and offer them rein positions and things like that. So that's very important. There's a lot of exercises you can do to get a horse to understand your bubble. One good one is you just get a horse to walk towards you, and then you just cast it out to the side, and then you can do it on a long lead. So the horse is walking at you from a long distance, and you let them follow the lead closer and closer and closer. When they get to arm's distance, you just bounce them around you like that. And that's a really good exercise just to get them to learn how to cast out on a circle. But also it teaches them how to deflect off your bubble and things like that. So that's, you know, something. So, yeah, the bubble is personal space. So think about that. It's your personal space. It's not my decision to tell you what your personal space is. It's your decision. You know how long your arms are, how long your feet are. You know your own body. You set that up yourself. But you've just got to understand that it has to be clear, and don't change it every day all the time. So I'm going to answer a few questions, because that's going to get me through all the few little topics that are about personal space that I'd like to talk about, because there's a lot of things I could sort of go on to about personal space and our personal bubble and things like that. But I'm going to answer a few questions, because the questions will enlighten a few people about a few other things. So, Cheryl, g'day, Cheryl. If you're online, Cheryl, I don't know if you are, but Cheryl, it's I got your question here. And I'm glad your horse is going well. He's good most mornings walking to the paddock, but almost on top of me when walking away from the paddock, but almost on top of me when walking back. Suggestions. And Kendra also commented underneath that, she said, same problem with my new but very sweet but very bargy horse, okay? So first of all, the reason horses push our personal space is because a lot of them lack focus. So what I mean by lack focus is a horse might be, you know, my little Duplo here again. Right, my horse is looking, oh, over at the paddock. Crash. Okay. If the horse was focused on little Duplo man, he'd go, oh, there you are, that's your bubble. Okay, but while he's looking over there, he's going to crash through here, or he's going to do that. So a lot of horses are focused in front of us, and that's why they barge into us. A lot of horses are focused everywhere else, and that's why they're looking that way, pushing that way, all those sort of things. So first of all, one of the best tools you can do is gain that horse's focus. Now, if you're good with a lead rope, you can sort of draw that lead, get them to sort of look at you or draw their thoughts through to you so you know that the thoughts aren't elsewhere. And every time those thoughts shift out elsewhere, you just pick up the lead and bring those thoughts back. And you can do that. Some horses have got so heavy in the lead that they sort of won't come around with that. But that's the tool that I like to go for the most, because to me, if you can pick up a lead and get their focus, then you can pick up a rein and guide their focus. So, you know, if you can wave a flag and get their focus, and that's a really good tool too, if you do it in a certain way. But eventually you've got to be able to do it through the rein, because to me, the reins are very important, and the quality of feel that you present your horses through your rope has to be very important, because that's going to help as they develop as a good riding horse. So waving a flag is a good tool to get a horse's focus, and then you can teach them the rope after you've got their focus. But then eventually you want to be able to pick up on the lead and get there and change their focus just as efficiently and quickly as you would if you were to wave a flag. So waving a flag to get a horse's focus will cause them to focus with a little bit more worry. Now, worry is not a bad thing if you use it in the right way. You can worry a horse and make them run away from worry. That's when I would say you're using worry as a bad tool, and the horse will start to associate, I step away from worry. And what do wild horses do? They move away from worry, okay? So I don't think it's sensible to wave a flag to teach them to run away from it as such all the time, because you're teaching them just to move away from the worry. But I will get a flag and I will pop that flag and the horse will go, what was that? And I'll go, come over here and say hello to me. And the horse will come over and it'll seek you for a bit of refuge from a little bit of worry, and it'll stand with you and go, oh. But what that flag's designed to do is just to draw that horse's focus back, and then it's what you do with that focus that's more important later on. So yeah, those things will help gaining focus. But when you're leading your horse, instead of turning around and pushing your bargy horse back like that, what I tend to do is, if I'm leading my horse, I try and lead with my hand out so it's going to follow the lead out beside me and then come past me if it's really bargy. So if I feel that horse go past my shoulder, I just do a U-turn, okay? So horse coming up beside little man, goes past his shoulder, turn around, whoop, the horse is back behind again. So what it would look like is it look like this, going, little man turns around, horse goes, oh no, I'm behind again, okay? And then the horse will do that, and then little man turns around, oh God, it's hard to do it as I'm looking backwards, but once you go out in front of your horse, once your horse goes out in front of you, you turn around and you walk away quite quickly, because the horse will be like, holy cow, where did you go? And then what that'll do is that'll give you a fair bit of space between you and your horse, because you let that rope go out a little bit too, and then you'll draw your horse around, and it might be 3 meters behind you then. And then you go, come on, I'm going pretty quick. And it'll go, oh, okay, I'll catch up a bit. And then it'll go, oh, no, I'm catching up to you, focused on you. But, oh, hang on, I got distracted. I want to go somewhere else. So then I'll go, do a U-turn again. And then eventually your horse will start to rate you and watch you, because it knows that every time it goes past you, you go off in a new direction. And then it'll start to rate you more and watch you, and it won't be pushing on you so much. And I do that more than other stuff. I might spend half an hour doing that before I even teach a horse to follow me, then back up, and follow me, and then back up, and things like that. So very important to try that one first. Make sure your horse is really solid in the backup. So teach your horse backing up every single day that you've worked, work it, get it soft in the backup in the nice transitions. And then once your horse has got a bit more focus, you can walk forward, back up, walk forward, back up, and teach them to sort of stop with you, back up, and just get more focused, okay? Focus is really the key. It's not, you know, about personal space. It's just lack of awareness. So once you've got awareness, you can teach them your personal space and exactly how big it might be when they're operating. So when we're all standing calm and having a scratch, it's going to be we're together, like close to each other. But when we're operating, I like to have that arm's distance so I can sort of stay safe, use my bubble to create performance and things like that. So yeah, U-turns, lots of U-turns. They're great. They work really well. They don't make your horse get worried about you. They don't make your horse, they will worry your horse because your horse is going, oh, crikey, I'm alone and you're leaving, and then they'll catch up. But they're not going to make you feel like, you know, you're threatening them, because a lot of people just turn around and shove them back and say, get out of my personal space, and do that way all the time. But then your horse ends up a bit nervous of you, whereas the other one makes them seek you and rate you and not want to lose you. And for separation anxiety, it works far better than moving their feet away from you and things like that, because you know, a horse with separation anxiety, you take it from the herd, you got to replace it with the herd. And you know, no horse wants to be pushed out of a herd, especially ones that lack confidence. So you don't start shoving them away from you. That's why people have got to be very careful with their personal space, because a lot of times they get a bit too shubby and make the horse feel like they've been pushing out of the herd all the time. So yeah, U-turns and things like that, teach them how to back up. But just be clear about your spot. That's the most important thing I can say. I've seen little kids stand there really still, and suddenly their ponies stop pushing on them because their ponies just calm down, because a lot of times our horses are pushing on our personal space because they're worried. They're like on high alert. And because we're sort of always constantly, you know, micromanaging and trying to fix and worried about their worry and fidgeting and trying to stop them and trying to move them and all that sort of stuff, then what ends up happening is that the horse stays on high alert because we're not grounded. And then they're on our space all the time because they're just sort of looking everywhere and shoving into us. But if we just stood solid like that tree, you find they'll just start to calm right down and just stand in a spot and not push on us at all. So that's probably more effective. Obviously, all the other things come in very important. Yeah, Karen just mentioned about the U-turns are great to do, are good in new environments and things like that. And when the horse becomes focused over the horizon, yeah, that's what they're there for. They're to take that horse, do a U-turn, go the other way for a bit. The horse faces, follows, focuses. And every time they lose focus and end up somewhere else, you're off in a new direction until they start to go, crikey. You know, every time I go off on my own, I'm sort of left on my own a bit and they're going the other way. So they actually start to want to rate you more and follow. So that's to me how they work. So there's another question from Rachel. Thanks for the opportunity. My question relates to personal space, but mainly energy problem. When casting my horse past me, she follows the feel of the lead rope nicely, but she has very little energy and goes past my shoulder and simply stops. Okay, very, very common in the cold-blooded horses. This is a very common problem. And when I teach people my way of sort of guiding horses, this is one problem that they will come up with, and I'll explain that in a second when I finish I'm trying not to drive her away, but I feel like if I ask for energy more softly, I have to nag, nag, nag all the time, almost every step. What has worked in the past is a firm, I mean it, smack on the ground, or occasionally smack on a rump with the whip. Then I have energy, but I also have a cranky, unhappy horse. How can I ask for more energy and get a good responsiveness from my horse that she maintains herself without nagging or whacking her, okay? Now, you push horses away and you chase on them too much, they will be cranky and unhappy about it. And if that is the way you work all the time, you'll always have a cranky, unhappy horse. So, and that problem that you're having is something that I come up across a lot, because when I'm saying to people, you know, stop driving the energy into your horses to get them to go away, guide them. When people guide them, it's very hard to supply energy to a horse, because a horse that's not motivated and is not worried about anything won't feel the need to put energy to the feet. And that is the hard thing. So the reason why driving horses work so well is because it puts worry into your horse, for one, and you can put extra pressure in, and then the horse will move away from that pressure, just like a wild horse does when it gets away, it seeks refuge from something that's causing a discomfort or worry. So driving works very well, especially on, you know, well, it doesn't, sorry, I say that. Driving works very well for a moment, okay? Gets that job done quickly, but it doesn't mean it's good for your horse. So when you drive into your horse, it's very easy to get them to go and get those feet moving. But when you're just guiding them, they send a plonk a little bit. So sometimes I might, like you said, pop the flag on the ground or something and get the horse to get a bit of awareness and then guide it again, okay? So the awareness of the flag will make it worry a little bit and make it feel like it's more ready to move its feet, okay? And then you cast its thoughts through the lead rope, okay? So that's something that I would tend to do more. So you guide that worry to a specific place. You don't just send it out there away from the flag, okay, or something like that, or the pop of the lead rope. So that's something to get them moving. The other thing, what I do with those horses is, some horses, they go past you, but they're not lost, and they don't just stop because they lack energy. They stop because there's a pivotal point on horses. Most horses, and people have been in my clinics, will understand this a little bit more, because they'll have watched me work the really troubled horses on one eye, and there's a really strong pivotal point on a horse. Well, it's a pivotal point of education, as in, you can see, right, if the horse was getting to there, there's this pivotal point where they get to there and they just want to turn around and face up, or they just want to plonk and lean in, okay? Or they get worried and they want to move away. But this point here, getting a horse to pass its eye past you one eye at a time can be quite difficult on a lot of horses. And sometimes you've got to stay there and just hover that horse out there on one eye until you see the side of its face soften. And you might have to just walk along with it. So that, instead of planting yourself in the middle and saying, I'm going to cast you around me, you might just lead that horse out on one eye, and out on one eye further and further, standing facing. It's like, you know, so you're facing it like you were going to cast it on a circle. So instead of facing the same direction, the horse is facing that way and you're facing this way. Okay, and you're leading it like this on one eye, and then you swap on the other eye and do it like that. So what that does is that just says horses to relax on one side of their brain. And when you see them relax and soften on that side of their brain, then there's an understanding. Yeah, that they've sort of let out some of that tension and they're starting to quieten enough to maybe go a little bit further. So I do that a fair bit with horses, because a lot of them never had that done before. They usually been sent away, and that was one of the big reasons why they couldn't balance on a circle, because they never had that fixed on either side of their brain. So then people wonder why they're not balancing when they get out there, because they still worried about just, you know, connecting with you on that side of their brain, and you never spent the time to just get them to sort of relax and soften. So when they get sent out there, they're seeking refuge and they're not going on a circle properly. So that's something I would spend more time, is walking with your horse until it's really soft on that eye. So don't worry about casting it past you and doing a circle, completing a circle, because then your horse might be getting stuck. So it's just getting stuck, a lack of confidence. Just walk it till it's soft on both eyes. And then what you'll find is it'll start to hover. You'll feel it. You'll know exactly what hovering's like, because if you spend long enough at it, you'll feel it. You'll just feel the horse hover off your bubble and just stay there, and you could draw it through further without a lot of resistance. You might have to stay at that, like this spot first, and then a little bit further, and then a little bit further, but they'll get better at it, and then cast them. And then something I do for the lazy horses, so I don't have to sort of try and chase into them and send them out away from energy, because people have sort of been watching a little bit of my stuff, know that that I talk about energy and how energy is one of the biggest tools that have separated horses. So the faster the horse goes, the more separated they feel. And in groundwork, it's very easy to create energy that the horse runs away from. So to me, that is only teaching a horse that if you create energy, the horse separates from it and gets a reward for separating away from that energy. So I try and teach people to sort of create energy, but know exactly where it's going to go. The horse not moving away from the energy or away from the person and their energy, okay? So something what you can do is once your horse is at, once you can stand side on, okay, like here, then you could just put a stick like this on your horse's back. Okay, I'll just put the horse up here like that. And I'm standing over here side on, and I could go tap, 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 and the horse will just walk a bit. And I'll go tap, 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 walk a bit. And then I'll just have my horse on a circle, only a circle the size of a long lunging stick or something like that. And I'll just have it sitting on their back, and I'll just go tap, 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 till they move. And then I'll release, and then I'll just go tap, tap, till they move. And then they'll start to constantly move. And every time they stop, you just tap. Okay, so if you already taught them to pass you, and then at this stage, you're just standing beside them. So instead of trying to chase them, you just stand there. You just go tap, 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 I'll move, and then I'll stop. And you go tap, tap every time they stop and until they learn to move. And then when they're learning to move and not stop, then you can just walk with them. Okay, and then you'll find once a horse can walk and be confident and keep walking without stopping, they'll start to free up in the energy. It'll start to happen without you having to push them and hunt them all the time. They'll just start to walk and hold walk. And when they can maintain walk, then they'll find a transition to trot and things like that. So I hope that helps that particular question. Is once they're confident in getting right past you, then you can stand side on and just little like lunging whip on their back and get them to walk a circle around you. Now that is online on some of the starting a Duchess. I'm doing that a little bit. If you go back to the, you know, maybe the third or fourth lesson or something like that, I start to put a stick on her back and just do that just to help her because she was a little bit stuck on energy. So I use that technique to get her to move. But the stick stays lying on their back. You're not chasing them with it, okay? You just lie it there so they can lying it on their back so they can just it's almost like a leg that or a person staying sitting on them. Okay, if you just pick the stick up and they run away from it, then they're actually running away from the stick, whereas it's just a tap tap stimulant like a leg aid to say move, and every time they stop you put that tap tap stimulant leg aid on again, but they don't think that they're moving away from it. They just think it's something to make them move. Mealy, my question, instead of having my horse lead behind you to instead lead beside you, if you've got a loose smiley rope and he's respectful of your space and your bubble. So I guess it's you're asking, it's okay if your horse can lead beside you as opposed to behind you. How big a deal is it leading behind you? For a horse that seems more calm when beside you, or can this be because of dominance sometimes? Sometimes my horse can get nippy when behind me, which sometimes feels like testing the boundaries or gelding games. He's a green off the track thoroughbred, versus sometimes feels like he's being dominant and trying to drive me. Okay, so leading in front of a horse will bring out them feeling like they're driving you, and a lot of horses will start to nip and bite and push and that sort of thing, like they're hunting you or herding you. That is the common thing if you're leading out in front. Young horses I lead out in front, just like a horse follows another horse. Okay. Now in the learning curve, they will think they're hunting you, okay? And some horses will get a little bit funny about it. So you have to be careful of that. And what I tend to do is I say I'm doing a leading transition and I'm not going to run. I'll go lead up, and then I'll slow down. And I'll lead up, and then I'll slow down. And I'll lead up, and I'll slow down. Because I'm teaching my horse to lead softly, so I just want to lead really softly. I'm not just getting out in front and just, you know, hauling it along and going really fast for a long time. Because if you do that, that's when they'll really start to hurt. So I'll do transitions until I know they're really soft. And if I feel my horse starting to get a little bit of that tension that they sort of want to start herding in on me, all I'll do is I'll turn around and face them, and they'll go, "Oh, what was I doing? Nothing." And I'll sort of do that. You'll shock them. It'd be a bit of a shock because I'll suddenly be facing them, and I'll go, "Oh, what was that thought?" And you'll just change that thought, okay? So the idea, you're just changing that thought, and it's not turning around to say, "I'm going to drive into you." It's just turn around and face them, and you'll see most of them will put their ears forward and go, "What? What was I thinking?" That most commonly will happen. So if I feel my horse is doing that too much, I just turn around and face them. And I might have to do that a lot of times, but after a while, I'll do more transitions, turn around and face them, and I go, "Oh, this is not a herding game, is it? I'm not just chasing you, and you're not just running away from me, are you?" Because you told them that. Every time they went funny, you turn around, and that will teach them that they're not chasing you. That usually helps. The other thing that also leading beside is something that you develop, and it's okay to do. But you have to monitor your horses, because as soon as a horse's head, like if you ride, if there's anyone, like some people out there, put your thumbs up if you ride out on trail rides, okay? Sure, people ride out on trail rides. Now, I'd like people to watch their horses on trail rides and watch their ears. Because if you watch horses on a trail ride, if you just got two or three people, or even just two people riding together, the horse that goes up front puts their ears forward. And the horse that comes in behind will put their ears back. And if there's a third horse in the middle, they'll have their ears sort of out here in the middle looking around like that. So, and then what you'll do, and you can always test the more alpha horse by doing this. If you're ever out on a trail ride, you test the alpha horse by having little overtaking competitions like that. And you'll find that the more submissive horse will actually start to put its ears back when this horse hasn't even passed its head. But the more alpha horse will actually put its ears forward a little bit sooner, and this one will sort of go, oh, you're taking charge now. So that's how you can sometimes test if you've got one of those more alpha leader horses versus another one, is you just do that one and you watch which one's the strongest to pull its ears forward first, and which one's the one to pull its ears back a bit sooner, the one that's ready to come in behind sooner. So when you're leading a horse, what you've got to be careful of is that they do the same with us. It's like if we're out front, they'll just sort of float along behind us and have us as the lookout horse out front. So that's why I like to do it like that, because I'm the lookout horse. I'm the one that sort of gets out in front of the herd and makes those decisions, because I don't want to teach my horse that it's always the lookout horse, because then when you go to a competition, your horse is going to be, "I'm the lookout horse all the time here, so I've got to look out for everything, so I'm going to not be balanced. I'm going to just look out." Okay, so, but there's a time that you want to lead him up beside you. And basically, if I think my horse gets past me too much and puts its ears hard forward and starts to really get out there, then I would teach the lead come back a bit behind me. And I would just get a spot that's real comfortable on that horse, that it can just float along and be centered with me without being on too much lookout ahead. If that makes sense. So I've got nothing wrong with people leading their horses up beside them and teaching them to lead beside, you know, so when you do holder classes and things like that, you've got to trot your horse out at the show or something like that, you can teach them to lead up soft. If they can lead softly in a lead rope, you can lead them anywhere. You can put them out there, you can lead them here, you can put them there, you can take them behind your back and send them out there if you like. It doesn't matter. Once that lead rope's soft and they'll guide by it, then you'll have no problems. The smile, watch out for the smile in the lead rope. Here we go. I've got myself a lead rope. This is a lead rope, by the way. So, try and get in the middle here. I'm going to try and get... This is a horse. This is a person. That's too big of a smile to be leading a horse with. To me, that's got no connection. If I wanted to drop my rope that low, I'd want my horse to start to slow down. I like to teach horses that they operate on that smile. So if they start to speed up, they know to slow down because they're actually making that lead rope drop. Okay, so that's the connective smile, because once I start to do that, this hand starts to feel a connection, okay? But when that lead rope's like that, they shouldn't be leading behind you like that, because that's them leading too close, okay? Because what I like to teach horses is if I was to sort of drop that lead rope out, my horse slows down. Drop the lead rope out, my horse slows down, yeah? So it's a good thing to teach your horses that you can walk fast and slow your horse down with the lead rope by just casting your lead rope back behind you, and they'll feel that lead rope go into a bigger smile, and they'll go, "Well, we'll have to slow down," but you could keep the same speed. A lot of people have their horses leading behind them, but the lead rope's not making any difference. the faster the person goes, the faster the horse goes. Whereas sometimes you want to test your horse and go, I'm going to go faster, but I'm going to slow you down with the lead rope. Okay, so if you get your horses to that stage, you know they're leading real nice. But a lot of horses are still leading through vision. So be careful on the smile and make sure it's an operating smile, not a stop-still smile or a slow-down smile. Karen, how do you manage personal space when your horse shuts out pressure? He's an off-the-track harness horse and has learned to ignore pressure and will not back off it. Sometimes he will, but other times he just shuts down. Now, this is a hard one and like comes into play. You know, so to use a flag to get a horse's focus, something you can do is you can wave the flag in a way that the horse hasn't seen before. So, and some horses haven't seen a flag. You've got to be careful because you might send them into high alert and then you lose your horse and gallop down the paddock and run through a fence. So obviously you have to be careful when you bring tools into play. But say for a horse that really shuts down, okay, there's ways you can connect with it. There's other ways. You can stand with your horse. You can do things that it likes, like find the scratchy spots and all those things that you start to release endorphins and start to open it up and start to go, oh, you don't just always push me and prod me and I just shut down all the time. But then what happens is they're still very hard to operate. So when you start to work them and you want to, you know, do something with them, they just go back into that memory mode of, oh, that's right, this is the stuff I don't like, just shut down, okay? So, you know, I see people have a certain rhythm. When I'm doing clinics, people operate their horses with a rhythm. And each person has their own rhythm. And what I notice is the horses get attuned to that rhythm. So I might say to someone, like at the last little young horse starting clinic I did, we just had a bit of a, just stop for a second. Young horse starting clinic I just did, we had a few people that had a rhythm. And when I said, just wave your flag, their horse would go, But when I wave the flag, the horse will go, oh, there's a flag there. But I did it in a different rhythm, and the horse was getting used to the person's rhythm. Oh, yeah. So when they waved the flag, they did this. When I waved the flag, I did this. And the horse went, oh, that was different. But what it did to the horse, it went, oh, I'm a little bit aware. And it took the horse out of the shutdown state it was in, okay? So you might do something to take that horse out of that shutdown state for a moment, and then when you've got that moment of opportunity when it's going, oh, crikey, I'm out here, I've just jumped out of my hole, you go, hey, I'm here. Would you like to lead up to me? Or would you like to lead over here? And then if you see them just go into that shutdown state, you just might do something again just to get them out of that hole again. And then they'll climb out of their hole and go, what? Crikey, I'm, you know, and then you'll give them something to do. It'll be something that makes them feel better about you. That's the thing, is you don't just give them something to do and chase them away. Otherwise, you'll end up shutting them back down again. You've got to show them that if they're worried, you're the leader and you can help them. So you are creating the worry through doing something that's scary enough to get them out of their hole. And then when they're out of their hole, you guide them so they can guide and feel good about your guidance. Now that's the hardest part, okay? It's easy to get them out of their hole, but to guide them and make them not just drop back in their hole again is one of the hardest parts about working shutdown horses. So gaining their focus and then guiding it in the right type of way. So if you start driving them around, then you'll start to shut them back down again. But if you can guide them and make them feel like a horse and search and you know, feel like they're following your ideas and following you. So I do a lot of leading with shutdown horses. Follow me, you know, follow me like you're following a herd and things like that, just to get them to sort of, you know, operate with me like that. But be careful, you know, when you, you know, obviously use a tool that because the thing is shutdown horses that have been desensitized and shut down, they're dangerous because what happens is they come out of their hole when something really goes wrong, and then they go off their, you know, completely off their dial. Yeah, Karen, focus and lack of focus is the same theme for us. It's a hard thing, focus. It's not that hard to get. Once you start to understand it, it's not that hard to get. And once you start to pay attention to it, you'll get more tricks up your sleeve to gain focus and gain soft focus. So you might sometimes gain a bit of hard focus on your horse first, because sometimes, you know, when you do something wrong, you get this hard focus on you, but then it's how you soften that focus that's the most important thing, and that can be a little bit difficult, but yeah, that's really, really important. Sorry, there's a lot of questions. Just quickly, for everybody who sends questions through, I'm answering the questions that came through that were directly linked to the webinar. I will get to the others if I can, but I'd love everyone, when we do the heads up that the webinar is coming, to ask the questions in that particular section, so it's all in the one spot. Because at the moment, I've got questions in different sort of areas that I'm trying to pick up on, and so I'm going through all these ones that are linked straight to the webinar, and there's a few that have come through that I may get to tonight. Cold back theory. Joe Gardner, this is the cold back theory. We have a young gelding being started. My partner saddled. Now, this is getting off the personal space questions. There's a few on separation anxiety and this one, which is cold back. And if people are willing to hang on for a bit, I'll answer a couple of them. We have a young gelding being started that my partner saddled way before he was ready. He's a sensitive fella. He bucked when he moved his feet. I have asked that he leave him alone when I go away working, as I won't go through everything. Okay, cold back is something that horses suffer with, some horses more than others. So there are some horses you can chuck a saddle on for their first time and girth them up and they wouldn't really do much at all. And there's some horses you've got to go through a whole process of desensitizing, and as in desensitizing areas of their body so they're not so sensitive and touchy, and getting them calm and relaxed in those areas, and then showing that they can put pressure on those areas. So whether it be firstly with your hands, then a rope, and then tensioning the rope until you see them relaxing their expression, and then you release and things like that. So you'd have to go through that process before you saddle them, and then when you saddle them, you might have an old saddle that you walk around without the girth done up, and then you walk them around with a tight rope and that you can loosen and release and all that, and then get them to trot with that rope and then build up to the saddle, and then hopefully by the time you got to the saddle, then the horse is calm about it. But there are horses, like I have a particular mare at the moment you might have seen a few photos, that she's a buckskin mare, and she's a mare I get in every now and again to ride that I've started, but she's a really sensitive mare, and she's sort of requires a fair bit of work and input, but every time you put a saddle on her or sit on her back, she's cold back. She's, you know, you have to go through a process, and she's really sensitive. And after a few days of riding and you know, when you've been around her and you have to unsaddle and saddle her in the same day, or I've been bringing her to a clinic when I go to a 4-day one and I need a horse because she just needs to get out and about. So with her, I've always got to go through it. And she's like, sometimes you ride her for an hour and you know she's sort of hunchy the whole way because she's just getting used to you sitting on her back. And so there are definitely cold-backed horses out there that are really cold-backed, and some that aren't at all. And the cold-back ones you've got to be more careful with, because sometimes you can start to send a worry in them about saddling, that every time they saddle up, they'll buck and get frightened. And you don't want them to start getting really frightened. Vanessa, not Gracie. Yes, Gracie. Vanessa, you saw Gracie at the Howlong Clinic, where I think I rode her for an hour, and I think every time I sort of jogged her, she'd still hunch up and start to, you know, do that, because I was sort of more busy trying to teach everyone else than look after myself. So anyway, she's a good horse, and she's a nice horse. It's just that she's got sensory processing, I think that's her. So another little question, there's a long question, and I've shortened it. I'm sorry, it's for Chris. The longer question goes on about a horse that used to be in a stabled environment, now it's come to, it's been in a manufactured environment all his life, it's been shown a bit. Now they've got it in a paddock environment, and it's obviously got very attached to a horse and can't be taken away from a horse, so it suffers from major separation anxiety. Their daughters, it was with a not so confident young girl who was riding it, and their daughter's now working with it, but she's having some problems. So that particular horse, what do you do with a horse like that comes out of a stable environment? Now, I'd say that horse had issues in the stable environment. To be honest, I can't imagine that it just comes out of a manufactured environment, goes into a yard, and it will be used to everything. But it was probably a horse that had lots of insecurities and everything in it, the whole whole way along, and now that it's in a in with a, another horse, has found comfort in being with another horse, and then taken away from that, it's gets very worried. Now, you might have been listening to sort of tactics to get our horses focused through this whole webinar, if you're online watching this at the moment, but you have to get your horses focused. So if you see that horse, I'm going to tell it. Well, actually, instead of trying to run through a bunch of things, I'm going to tell a story of a horse that I worked some years ago in Germany, which was super separation horse, you know, and would, if you just let it away from the herd, it'd just pull out of your hands and gallop back to the herd, and it would go on off the radar when you took it away from the herd. So what I did with that horse is I worked it in the herd, and I just got it to follow the feel of a rope, follow me, follow me, follow me, feel good about following me. And every time it had sort of looked somewhere else, I just walked the other way, and I worked it in the herd for a while. So, and just getting it to focus on me, and every time it cast its focus away, I bring it back, and just you know, walking around until it turned so many times towards that lead, I got more control over it and things like that. But it started to feel good with me. So then I could take it about 50 metres away from the herd, and it wouldn't pull away. And I got that horse all the way to the gate, and the herd stayed down in the paddock, and that horse was focused and soft and calm. And then I let it through the gate, and that's when it started to kick in, that, oh, crikey, herd's over there. And it started to really start to bounce around. And all I did was just draw back to me, draw back to me, draw back to me, walk away, draw back to me, walk away. And it did sometimes want to take my space, and I didn't push it back. I just stepped out of its way. And then when it went out there, I'd draw it back to me again. But by that time, I had that horse under control because it didn't want to pull away, because in the herd, I steered it so many times and steered its thoughts so many times through that rope that it sort of forgot how to pull away, sort of thing. So when I was outside the yard, I never took it any further till it centered and calmed with me there. And then I took it a bit further, and I took it another maybe 200 meters away from the herd, and did it again and did it again until I got to the arena, and which was way out of sight of the herd. But and then I let it go in the arena, which it obviously went and just paced the fences and that. And then I finally sort of got it to sort of connect with me by, I'd always walk to the spot it wanted to go, but this is going off track to what you want to do. But anyway, what ended up happening was when I caught that horse again and led it back to the herd, it followed me everywhere I went. It was just following me over mound hills. It was just going everywhere, fine, soft, calm. And it almost like it didn't even acknowledge the herd when I walked it up to the herd. It just walked up to the herd and that. But that horse took a fair bit of work. But I gained its focus, and I gave it the herd. I replaced it with the herd. Now, to do that, I had to get the horse to really focus on me and stay focused and follow that soft feel towards me all the time and come towards me like it's following me and feeling good. And every time it came into me, I just let it stand there. I'd even open up my arms and just let it stand in my bubble and just stand like it's like under the shady tree. Like I said, when you grow your roots into the ground and you grow your leaves out, it just wanted to stand in there. And I got it really centered with me, and then doing those sorts of things as well. And then after a while, that horse started to feel really good around me and with my guidance. And then what I'd do is, you know, then that would transfer into your riding and everything like that. But if you can't gain that with your horse, then you can try all these tricks in the world. You can have, you know, different yards and systems and all that sort of thing. But while your horse is out in the paddock, I'd just let it be with its friend. Let it have the life it never had. As far as I'm concerned, every horse needs a friend in the paddock. You can't have horses on their own. It's, you know, I disagree with horses that have been put in yards in single environments and that sort of thing. And a lot of them start off troubled because the way they were weaned, and then it just goes on through their whole life. And, you know, I believe if you're going to own a horse, it's better that if, as much as you can to have it with company. So I hope that helps, Chris. There's a, you know, there's a lot in that, and there's a lot of, it's a big question. There's a lot of things you can sort of look at. But leading and how you lead is a really one way to do it. Ainsley, I've got a question here from you about Pinky. When I'm leading him and I start to walk faster. Now, did you, Ainsley, I've pretty well answered your question in the last one about the horses that sneak up and start to get nippy. Okay, so he's nipping and he's biting when he starts to catch up to you. Okay. So something you can think about with Pinky is when you lead him, turn around sometimes when he starts to trot up and get a bit nippy and do that turn around and say whoop, and he'll go whoop. The other thing you can do is when the rope starts to go loose and he's starting to make ground on you and catch up, you can carry a little flag with you or something like that. And every time you feel him start to just sort of go faster than you and catching up on you, you just pop the flag really quickly and he'll go, whoop, what was that? And he'll slow down. You're not chasing it towards him because the flag's out in front of you, and just it'll just shock him enough to go, oh, I'm aware again, okay? That's another way to, that you can sort of just get him to sort of, you know, stop and just rate you a little bit more. And yeah, and just do that until he starts to trot along without thinking that he's got to catch up and be a bit nippy and things like that. So either turn around so he goes whoop, and just practice lots of walk to trot transitions until he can trot along without feeling that he's hurting you. And yeah, also another one, you know, you can just do that little flag pop. Brenda, I think you had agreed with that as well, and that there's with those two questions that I think they're quite linked. Oh, this is one I'd like to answer quickly too. There's another one about Cosmo that came in earlier in the thing, and I'll probably come across that one. Now, actually, sorry, I will answer the Cosmo question because I've just been talking about separation anxiety. Now, there's no ways you can desensitize a horse. I don't do a lot of desensitizing at clinics, but the horse Cosmo, when he goes out of his environment, he's worried about everything, you know, the scary buckets, all things like that. Now, desensitizing a horse to tarps and buckets doesn't fix that. Leadership does. So what I just talked about this horse in Germany, about getting them to come and, you know, feel good around you, be guided by you, all those things, they're the ones that help this. And so I think Cosmo, he's got to go out with a leader, and he's got to be, you know, so every time his focus gets distracted, you redirect it back to you. Every time he's distracted, redirect it back to you. And that's going to be a constant battle maybe for a week or so. But if you can gain his focus, then if he's not focused on everything else, then he's not worried because he's focused on you and you're calm and centered. So why should he be worried? Okay, so that's back to that focus again with Cosmo. You can't, you know, and then if a horse has got a leader and they're going through an environment relaxed, then what's going to happen is they're not going to jump at everything all the time because they don't hold all this tension. And if anyone I heard this, it was off Ross Jacobs, I think Harry Whitney may have been the one that said this, and Ross passed it on through one of his blogs or something like that. It's about the Worry Cup, and if you go online on his YouTube, you'll see, I think he's got the little story on that, but and I think it's a great explanation because it sort of sums it up really well. Is if you've got a cup and you start off and the horse, you catch your horse and there's this much worry in the cup, but you don't tip it out, then you go to saddling your horse and the horse is a bit worried in the saddling, it gets this much worry in the cup, and then you take it out the yards and the cup fills up this much, and then you go down the laneway and the dog runs out, well, the worry cup tips over and then that's it. Okay, but if you had have tipped the worry out all the way along and not let it keep filling up, then what happens is when the dog comes, only this much worry in the cup, but it's not enough to spill it. All right? So think of it like that. That's a really good explanation, that one. I think it's probably one of the better explanations of worry, but it's more so how do you tip worry out? Like, okay, well, it's all good to say that, but how do you tip the worry out? Well, you gain your horse's focus, you give it something to do, and you watch that tension come down, and then when it's come down, then you can go to your next thing, okay? So with Cosmo, I'd say getting him to lead around, follow you, be calm and centered with you, and then when he goes out, he's going to be a lot better, okay? So you've got to practice on gaining the focus first and you know, distracting him from the worried things. Another question, I haven't got the name on this one. Sally Ann. My question is the best and safest way to leave my gelding off my mare when I go riding. Hope this is not a silly question. No such thing as a silly question. Some of the questions that people hold back on because they think they're silly were the best ones. So first of all, you've got to have a gelding that's, you can teach your horses, young horses to lead. So what I do is, I teach horses, trying to get in the camera. Here we go. And horse. No, that's not going to work. So basically, if this was a young horse's head, the black bit of the pen's the young horse's head. So this bit here is the young horse's head. And you're on this horse here. Don't lead your horse like that. Okay, start side on like that. And just always keep your horse bent round your pony horse, you know, the horse that you're ponying. And keep your horse's head towards the middle of your horse and just walk around. So your horse's hip is always facing out this way, not towards your horse, okay? And you walk around them like that. And you just keep walking around them and you swap sides and you walk around the other way. And then slowly you dribble that horse into coming up and following you, okay? And following off with you. Dribble them up in and follow off with you, okay? And as soon, and because you've done a lot of that circling technique there, what will happen is as soon as you feel your horse get a bit tense and like sort of get a bit narky or something like that, what will happen is that other little horse, like the horses talk to each other when you lead them, see? And if you're not aware of what they're saying to each other and you're not listening to them, you'll have this horse pull back before you even had a chance to fix it. But if you're listening to what they're talking to each other, because it's all happening through their little body language all the time, they're having a conversation while you're leading, and your horse is going to say something to that horse and say, "Oh, I'm a bit sort of, you know," and you'll feel them. You'll see an ear flick, you'll see an eye. You'll say, they'll be telling that other little horse that, you know, you're getting a bit close, mate. And if you get any closer, this is a horse that hasn't led off before, I might do something. And then this other little horse will hear what the other horse said through its body language. It will see it, feel it, and it'll go, "Ooh, I'm going to pull back a bit." So every time your horse goes to say, or you think it's about to say something, tell that horse to back off or go away, you just curve its thoughts a bit and turn around your horse a little bit. So you take that thought away from your horse. And then that thought that your horse had won't scare the little horse that you're leading so much. So you don't just pull and push and kick and pull and maul them along. I just ride around them. So I keep this little horse facing my horse's rib cage as I ride around like that, okay? And then I just slowly trickle them in and then they follow off like that. And then if I feel this horse start to get a little bit anxious, or my horse starting to tell that horse that it's a bit funny, then I'll just go back to that circle again and just circle them around and then walk off with them again until they just start to sort of learn that it's okay and they can just walk along with each other. Okay, so that's something I'll do, and I practice on both sides. It's really going to help. There's always other things you can do, but I do that in the yards for a few days first until you get your horses really sort of soft together and that sort of thing. But yeah, clinics. Actually, I was listening to True Unity, Tom Dorrance on a CD, and yeah, it's just part of him talking about at a clinic how someone rode past another horse and there could have been a bit of a bad accident. It never turned into a bad accident, but it got pretty hectic. But basically, had that person riding up just curved off a little bit, nothing would have happened because the two horses, they were talking to each other over here, and then as they were getting close, the rider wasn't aware of it and they just wanted to push their horse straight past. So then bang, okay? But if they had just done that, that horse would have relaxed and nothing would have happened, okay? So that's something you've got to be aware of riding around horses all the time. You've got to be aware of your own horses. Conversation is having with the horses around it, and you've got to be aware of even watching other horses and the conversation they're having, because there's a lot of people get themselves into sticky situations because they're just not listening to what their horses are doing. And horses talk to each other all the time, and they're having conversations when we're out on them. And maybe we should tune into those a little bit so we can get ourselves out of situations. But when you're teaching young horses to lead, I learned this trying to get following a horse to get it to canter. Every time a horse in front canters, your horse pulls like that. And I learned that quickly in the old days of getting on these young horses and following a horse, trying to get him to go a bit faster when I was riding these young breakers and stuff like that, is if someone was on the horse in front and they popped in the can, and my horse would actually stop because they'd see that flick up of the, and they'd stop like that. So instead of wanting to canter and follow them, they actually stalled. But that was like a big thing there. But listen to your horses. Anyway, everybody, I hope I answered most of everybody's questions out there. Thanks for coming online and listening. There's a lot of questions come through, so yeah, but everyone, if you could just put them through on the when we put our post out, put them in the comments under that particular post, and then they're all in the same little yard, and I can go in and I can sort them all out. Otherwise, I've got the questions in paddocks all over the property, and I have a bit of a job trying to find them all. So anyway, thanks everybody. I'll see you next time.
I don't know how you can talk about that.